You sign Manchester City's goalkeeper, but you have to cut a $50,000 check to New England Revolution first to have him. It's not so MLS.
Oh, that is just the distillation. Hello.
What else can we possibly tell you about North American soccer? Of course, this is a podcast dedicated to just that. I'm Nick. With me, as always, is Andrew. How are you doing? It's been about a month since we've sat and chatted, and a lot of stuff has happened.
The year has ticked over. I spent some time in Vancouver and then spent some time in a hotel hoping not to get COVID after one of my family members got it. Didn't get it.
Great. That's good.
And hopefully everybody over there was fine, as far as I'd heard. And I have been back at it here in New Brunswick in 2024, trying to not necessarily make any massive New Year's resolutions, but tighten up my game somewhat and come at the year fresh. What clubs do you think are being successful at that at New Year, New Me?
New Year, New Me. Well, I think the kind of the most interesting case of the team rebuild is the one that I don't think any of us were really expecting necessarily. I think we all knew there would be changeover at LAFC, but for a team that reached the final and performed, I would say, pretty well last season, there's been a tremendous amount of movement with LAFC. We can get to all of the particular transfers with that club, but I was a bit surprised to see like a complete goalkeeping overhaul, which felt like the most unnecessary thing LAFC really needed to do. And of course, there's still some question marks over players. So a team that could look quite different, although I would say LAFC is not unfamiliar with changing out three or four pieces per season. But that's kind of the one that stands out to me. Who stands out for you?
That's a big one, especially because they have got a new club as well. They went out and purchased majority ownership of Grasshopper Club Zurich.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Now, here's a question for you. OL Reign, you know, Leon went and bought all these clubs and nicknamed them to OL, you know, whatever. OL Reign. Now Leon has had to offload the Reign, and they will just be Seattle Reign again. They're going to have their normal logo. Are we going to get LAFC Zurich? Like, how would you implement this?
I feel like
how would you implement LAFC's brand in another country?
Yeah. You can tell the rich people get bored when they just start going out and collecting more clubs. I mean, let's face it. LAFC doesn't have the most exciting name to begin with, so I feel like it would make zero sense. So I fully expect to see an LAFC Grasshopper Zurich, you know, monstrosity. Frankenstein child type deal. Just all the logos, all the crests, all the names, put it all in there.
Grasshopper fans, look forward to your black and gold logo.
Yeah.
Coming up. How has your New Year's run-in been so far?
My run-in with New Year's? It's been okay. Yeah. I feel like I'm staring down the barrel of a lot of soccer coming my way, and honestly, I'm like, I'm not ready for it. Can we have, like, I don't even play, and I'm like, can I have a longer off season before we get back? Like, we just did this. But the excitement will come. I had an auspicious start to the new year. I was up at Van Dusen Gardens Festival of Lights on New Year's Day, and was like walking through this little tunnel with nice lights. And I look over and I'm like, I know that face and I know that voice. I did. It was Brian White.
Ha!
Taking photos with his partner in the nice light tunnel there. Nice lights. I didn't stop for a chat, but I was just like, I mean, that's fucking Brian White or I'm the Queen of England. I don't know. It felt like the right start. If you're a Whitecaps fan, to run into a Whitecaps player, you want to run into Brian fucking White, as he's known in this house, when he scores goals.
Your coronation will have to wait, but I know it'll happen.
Yeah, eventually. So that felt good. Otherwise, we got a big dump of snow in Vancouver. I know it's cold everywhere, but Vancouver's joined in on that fun. Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm just, as ever, trying to be like, all right, more things. Here we go. Well, okay.
At first, and this is the case, of course, everywhere because the MLS season is starting mid-February, but even earlier than that, we're getting the first shock of Champions Cup games. I still haven't changed my mental look at this. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking about that where it was like I got the email, the start of the Vancouver Whitecaps club itinerary emails that are like, preseason training starts next week. And I was like, oh, will I still be in town for that? And I was also like, it's fucking January 2nd. Why are we thinking about the preseason starting next week?
Because CONCACAF Champions Cup kicks off February 6th in Langford, Canada.
In Langford. All right. So try to walk us through, as somebody very familiar with ferries, how weird it is that not one but two clubs are using Langford as their base for CONCACAF Champions Cup activities that aren't Pacific.
I feel like a similar comparison would be if the Red Bulls, like, actually, it would be easier if the Red Bulls hosted a Champions Cup game on Staten Island. That would be more convenient than it will be for Whitecaps fans to get to the island. Now, I think that there's a great opportunity to, because, of course, Pacific FC, that's their home stadium and their hometown. So I think there's a nice opportunity for the fan base there. Obviously, sucks hard for the mainlander Whitecaps fans. I can only imagine the Tigres traveling support might be a little bit thin on the ground for that one, but never say never.
Cavalry is playing one of their games there.
Yeah, I love it. Everyone should. I think every single team should have their preseason in Langford. My biggest takeaway from all of this is the enormous missed opportunity. If you're wondering what the hell we're talking about, BC Place was booked for the Home and Garden Show when these Champions Cup games got scheduled. As we know, they got scheduled quite late, so that meant there was limited availability of places to play. I feel like the major missed opportunity here is to amalgamate CONCACAF Champions Cup with the Home and Garden Show. I mean, if you want to talk about crossover audiences, I really feel like there's a missed opportunity there to do like a break at halftime that is, you know, like, and now the starting lineup of Tigres will walk you through how to pot your bulbs for spring. I'm just saying. Think about it for next year.
That would have been better synergy. This note may not make a lot of sense for our non-US BC listeners, but please come on this journey with us. What is Andre Pierre Gignac buying at the Triple O's menu on the ferry to Langford?
Oh, he's getting a pirate pack for sure.
the children's meal shaped like a small pirate ship.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like this is a once-in-a-life opportunity for Tigres to do the Pacific Buffet, Canada's only waterfront dining experience on the high seas. Boy.
A lot of the BC sort of islands, I rely on this water transport. This is not really related to it, but I appreciated somebody found the old fast ferries in Egypt. And they still had the signs to buy a Nanaimo bar for like $2 at the canteen.
Amazing. Deep cut BC Ferries content here for all three of you out there. But I'm going to have to start working on how to say things in Spanish. Like, with the owner of a black BMW, please return to your vehicle. Your alarm is sounding.
Well, yeah, it's a unique opportunity. Or seaplane. I guess you could take seaplane. Is this is actually a good question, but not just making jokes about BC ferries. You know, we've talked before. It's a continuous discussion point about whether or not, you know, clubs are buying commercial flights or not. Is there a non-commercial option to get there? Like, would it just be that you fly into Victoria Airport and take a coach up or something?
I believe so, yeah. I mean, if they take the seaplanes, they're going to have to go four at a time, I think. So that could take a while. I'm so here for it. And a truly That's So CONCACAF moment. Just delicious. This is why we do this podcast, folks, because the headlines and the jokes write themselves. We don't even really have to try that hard.
They had the team from Mexico that was not Tigres that had, or was it actually Tigres that had to, that was came to BC Place and had to wait in the airport for hours and hours and hours. And they're like, let's make it slightly more complex.
I believe it was Tigres. Yeah. It's all good here. It's good times. Traveling in Canada is fun. A truly BC experience is coming to BC and immediately being screwed by how hard it is to get places.
So they've announced that the world related to this. This isn't necessarily MLS, but it relates to this topic. I appreciate the tweet that I saw. The World Cup final for 2026 has been announced that it's going to be taking place in Dallas. And the amazing, like, result that I've, the response to this that I've heard is, in what way does it make sense to have the World Cup final in a location with no public transit?
Yeah. I mean, this could be the beginning of something beautiful for Dallas.
Kim McCauley on Twitter said, imagine if you went to the World Cup final in another country and asked somebody to get to the train to the stadium and they said, what train? I'd lose my fucking mind.
I feel like that's so true of a lot of American cities, though. And
so
some Canadian,
yeah.
It turns out.
They're going to have to work something out, because I feel that a lot of these big NFL stadiums, whenever there's like a truly major event, it's like, I just think of when WrestleMania was in like the New Jersey NFL stadium. And like there was no public transit. Everybody, the available buses stopped running, and then all of a sudden it was a massive disaster. Like they've got to think of something, but this does seem like if this was a single country thing, they would not have gotten this far without announcing a major infrastructure campaign to build some sort of...
I think it's safe to say FIFA's not exactly always the most forward-looking of institutions, and a lot of these decisions sort of are made, and then you're like, yeah, wait, how are we going to play in the middle of a desert that's 50 degrees? We'll figure it out as we go. What could go wrong?
It's a big stadium with lots of interior. It looks very fancy. It looks like the top of the line. You know, NFL icebox monstrosities. So you got to get your, you got to one up the Copa America if you can.
Well, and speaking of one upsmanship for disaster, you could also be Sporting Kansas City and hire disgraced Gavin Wilkinson, only to fire him like 5 days later.
Eight.
Gavin Wilkinson. Sorry. Let's give him those 3 days extra credit. He was there. He lasted for 8 full days. A baker's half dozen of a week.
Without getting too deep into the Yates report, what had happened with that, he was essentially associated with allegations and concerns around having covered up the departure of Paul Riley, and essentially, when you look at the Timbers trying to move situations on without necessarily punishing or with no accountability for the people that had got on with it, he's one of the people that blame falls to. He was also directly involved in the allegation that he had essentially told Manishim like to stop being so open about being gay. So and perhaps that her departure from the Thorns was a part of that. And so there was a significant, when he was with the team, there was a significant amount of pushback from their fans until he was moved until he left that organization. And I think they did, off the top, this is off the top of my head, but I think they did do the thing where they are doing now with Merritt Paulson, where they tried to remove him from the Timbers or the Thorns, but leave him on the Timbers. Mm. And that's what I kind of think of the most when I think of this decision from Sporting Kansas City to hire him for a sporting director, is this idea that the NWSL and the and MLS are like separate universes, and someone's misdeeds in the NWSL universe.
Yeah, it's like the education system. Sorry. Too serious?
Just
move them around. Just move them around. And everything changes as good as a rest when it comes to serious misconduct allegations.
And I guess here's the challenge is, in a situation where no formal, no formal punishment, to my knowledge, was handed out. He was never suspended from football.
Right.
So that puts us in the position as fans and members of the soccer community to think, like, well, how many times does somebody have to get fired before it's sort of like payback for? But at the same time, that's the issue with having lack of clear accountability. And it's also the issue when you then are putting somebody who has ability to make personnel decisions and is able to gonna come around to be like, we need the right personalities for our team culture. And it doesn't, and don't look at my past or what my personality is.
In this whole environment too, and then also to put out a club statement. And I will say, SKC made a mistake clearly, and then they moved to rectify after hearing from the fans. But to also put out a statement, it's like, well, we did do a vetting process. It's like, maybe don't continually tell on yourself and just say you made a mistake. Because
okay, so,
to say that you did a vetting process is like, so, and what was that vetting process then? To just literally ignore any and all media about the person?
So here's what I found when I was looking this up to research this episode that floored me in this situation. And I think that this, again, just speaks to how challenging moving people on from the community that have been involved in this is, and the network of relationships that put somebody back in this position. They engaged a consultant to create a short list of candidates for this position, and Gavin Wilkinson was not on it. They hired somebody to draw up a list of the best possible candidates, and then they went turn around and hired their pal.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find the exact source on this, but that's just a great example of sort of the pernicious back channels, because how do you guard against that sort of stuff? Because none of it is ever formally said. It wasn't put in the press release, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was Jeff, I believe it was. It was Jeff Reuter of The Athletic that reported that. And it's just, he was not among the candidates that were identified and presented by Nolan Partners. And it's like, that just represents to me a turbocharged form of, shooting your own foot off, where it would have cost negative dollars to do nothing in this situation. You had actively spent money.
Yeah. But it shows, I mean, everything you spoke to is true. And I think just the egos involved as well, is that these people clearly think they're above it all, and that it just shouldn't matter, or that people will have forgotten. Like, to say that they didn't know or like didn't even consider, I don't really believe is a possibility. I think there would have had to have been some discussion. And I imagine that just went something like, well, that was like, that's blown over now. We've moved on from that. Second chances, et cetera, et cetera. It's just a truly bizarre move. I mean, they have also significantly, even before this, elevated Peter Vermees's position. And, you know, it just strikes me as to go to double down on a guy that's had such a long tenure there and has, a relatively positive relationship with the fan base. And then to just make a decision like this, truly, truly baffling. But at this point, it never surprises me that clubs just continue to make these boneheaded decisions. And I think it also speaks to how few people can be at those decision-making tables sometimes, and that they can override whatever sensical thing they might have even paid for, as you said. Like, normally you hire consultants to agree with you. It's actually kind of the exception to hire the consultants and then be like, you know what? No, we're going to go with a different option that hasn't been vetted. And as you say, the free option was just to literally make no change. And now they've destroyed some more goodwill and spent a bunch of money doing it.
And they clarified in that they said in that Athletic story they are still going to try and hire a sporting director. So
who's going to feel really awesome about starting at this world-class institution that clearly has a very high bar.
Another big executive news, the chief executive of MLSE has changed, Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment. The Ontario sports, tontine between Bell and Rogers.
Mm.
Where they, in order to ensure that one broadcast conglomerate doesn't get cut out, they're half owned by all of them, and it owns the Maple Leafs, and it owns the Raptors, and it owns Toronto FC. And Keith Pelley, who used to work for Rogers as an executive, and was the one who negotiated the big long NHL deal that presumably has worked for someone, although it's questionable one way or the other. And now is with the European Golf Tour, is in charge of the Canadian Sports Institution. During his introduction, talked about all of the great players at all the MLSE clubs, including Fernando Bernardeschi and Lorenzo Insigne.
It's just, in my notes, I have a note about Herdman sort of doubling down on Insigne and Bernardeschi, and I don't know. I feel like I've got a little bit of history behind me to be like, I don't feel super confident about TFC's luck this season, but I think Herdman's really rolling the dice on doing a complete rebuild around two, I think it is objectively fair to say, underperforming players for TFC. And, like, never say never. Stranger things have happened, but considering they didn't really seem to get on with anybody, including themselves at times last year, I don't really see how the culture shift happens. And I think this is a very different project for Herdman than what he's been used to. We've seen his impact on developing younger players. I think he's also had a hand in managing players in terms of more senior players as being in leadership positions. But we have a small sample size of Insigne and Bernardeschi actually listening to anybody or rising to the occasion on or off the pitch. So I'm interested to see what happens with TFC. I mean, I have no attachment to whether they do well or not. And it would be certainly good for the league to see those two highly paid players rise up to the occasion and do something really amazing, like be teammates. I don't know that it's going to happen, though.
It's a challenging, question, because from his position, it's like, he might have some ability on whether or not to keep them, but they are extremely expensive assets that have been purchased by his management. And, if you're a chef and the owner of your restaurant buys you a massive Italian stone-fired pizza oven and plops it in the center of your line, you kind of can't just ignore that and make pastas. You have to use the materials you've been given, and it will be this Keith Pelley's role to either use what he has to try and turn it into some sort of a deal. He apparently is somebody who likes to have more of a public profile than I read it a couple minutes ago. I can't remember what the name of the last MLSE president was, but the one before that was Tim Leiweke, who is known for the bloody big deal.
Yeah.
That brought Michael Bradley and Jermaine Defoe to Toronto FC. So that position can have consequences for Toronto FC in terms of what that person's approach to business is and what that person thinks is a smart move or not. So that will be whether to try and use those players as leverage for another deal, whether or not to try and say, you know, these are our jewel box players and you've got to make something of them. That'll be in his decision chest.
Yeah. I mean, I think all signs right now point to it. It's going to be Insigne and Bernadeschi leading the line. And certainly that seems to be the message from Herdman, although we know also there's the what is said and then what actually happens. And we know with the summer transfer windows that open up as well, sometimes you're like, oh, yeah, no, this is our core player. And then late May hits and suddenly they're out the door.
CJ Sapong went on the Cool Against podcast and said that of last year's Toronto FC locker room, that they should make an all or nothing. It should have had the all or nothing cameras in there about it, saying that there was issues around Bernadeschi constantly vaping at the training facility. And he said, I try to have a perspective on somebody, you know, nobody wants to be told what to do, but I also get it. Cause it's like, bro, just stop vaping.
God bless CJ Sapong. I didn't know that.
Bro, just don't vape is the specific. It's so important to get that term, that line correctly. Priceless. Cause it has been bouncing around in my brain.
Bro, just don't vape.
Bro, just don't vape.
That's going to be the episode name. Something about the bleached blonde tips at his age made me feel like he might vape significantly. There's so much movement and things that have happened. A couple of things that I just wanted to like briefly touch on that are like non-transfer news because there's been so many transfers.
Ozzy Alonso,
longtime MLS veteran and presence, and obviously MLS Cup winner, has retired from the game. That one I feel like kind of flew under the radar a little bit. I think he only made the decision a couple of weeks ago, but obviously had a long and industrious career, frustrating the midfields of many players and many teams. And then we already have our first season-ending injury, and the season hasn't even started yet. During Inter-Miami's first preseason clash, Facundo Farias is now out with an ACL injury. And I'm just noting this primarily because this is something that we have been talking about with more crowded schedules and much higher expectations. I think also part of the modern game has shifted, and we see a lot more of these injuries. But a really bright young player who was really part of the sort of the secondary success story of Inter Miami is now out for the entire season. So I'm kind of like a watch this space with all teams, especially teams participating in multiple competitions. And even just through preseason, you forget like stuff happens, knees get knocked, heels break, and not everybody who enters preseason necessarily is going to be in the starting lineup. So that's unfortunate. We, of course, wish him a speedy recovery. Watch your kneecaps, pals.
That sucks because I felt that he was one of the mid-year pickups that, that Miami had made where you could say, okay, so they're going out and they're signing all of these Barcelona players, but they are also making smart decisions.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah. Hopefully they're not just buying old Europeans. They're also buying players that have, some some hot, using that clout to buy, you know, younger prospects that can come in and hopefully contribute to some degree. Mm-hmm. And he was one of those guys. So
that's tough.
That's tough. And like you say, you know, on top of the League's Cup and all of the competitions that people are finding their ways to invent, this is also, you know, Inter Miami as part of this, you know, transformation that they are they're undergoing is going on their first big world tour for the first time. This was a friendly against El Salvador, which I thought was amazing.
Yeah, when you have enough clout as a club team to take on an entire nation, that's the kind of confidence only Messi can bring.
That's right.
Send us your nation's best.
And Julian Gressel said, "Okay." Because Gressel, did that happen by the last time we talked? Gressel is in Miami now. That was going to happen, but it hadn't happened yet.
I think it was a rumor, but we did not get that one on air. So it's still so painful to see him moving around as a free agent. I know that the Vancouver deal was like, we either have him for a bit and let him go for nothing, or we don't get him at all. I just, there's some part of me that will forever be like, could we have not just shaken the money tree? Like, 'cause there's got to be some way to have made that stick. But we wish him well, of course.
Right. Ozzie Alonso played at Atlanta and Seattle, and then also with Minnesota United. And he was great. He was fun. He was fun to watch. He was a name that of at both of those clubs who you know were when they were making or at Seattle he was a big name while they were making a big push forward. Mm-hmm. You know, in their first era after initially entering the league.
Coaching wise, we've had some movement. Minnesota United's interim coach quit, so they have a new one. I did not bother to write down either of their names because it's going to change probably as soon as this episode goes up anyway. But yikes! The season is coming up, and Minnesota United is still on the search for a head coach. I do not believe there's been any movement on that story yet.
Well, if you've got a resume... We've got some news you can use. Maybe it's an opportunity to get in. I know that you. It's tough because Minnesota wasn't always getting the. It was clear that Minnesota wasn't getting the results that they wanted, and it wasn't the worst time in. I guess it was right before the. It was. I don't think they were out of the playoffs at the point, at the time when they fired Adrian Healy, and.
Adrian Heath.
So, Heath. And I don't think that, you know, the end of the season is obviously a fun time to hire a coach, and you're really not supposed to negotiate with people before you fire your existing manager. But it kind of feels weird that they have come to this point where they made this bold decision to get him out of there, and they had really no plan B.
Yeah, as ever. I think death and taxes and firing your coach without a replacement in mind are sort of the old standbys in this industry, it seems.
Canada just extended Mauro Biello as their interim manager because the Copa America is coming up in March.
True story. Well, hey, if you can hold out till March, Phil Neville might be available again. So.
Oh, my God.
Sorry. We'll give him a fair shake.
Phil Neville, no, I won't. Absolutely not.
Timber.
So one of the other most, like, we talked a little bit at the top with LAFC, but we've had this extremely, to my mind, extremely strange turn of events where you had Maxime Crépeau, who came back from an injury, had a run to MLS Cup. The MLS Cup final, where I would say that he was one of the absolute big faces of that club. And I thought there was a little bit of shithousery about it, but I thought he did quite well. I thought that he, you know, was, I don't think you could look at the performance and think that, that it was anything less than stellar. And I guess what had happened was that, you know, there became news that he was not going to be continuing with LAFC and that they were looking into Hugo Lloris from Tottenham Hotspur. And just the idea of that transfer itself is so wild. But everybody wondered, why would you go away from your keeper? And it turned out that there was a desire to have some more money on Maxime Crépeau's part, and LAFC did not have the desire to pay any more money. So they went out and got a generational French goalkeeper who's played for the same English club in the Premiership for years. I don't understand how the dollars and cents of this deal make any sense at all.
If we know anything, it's that John Thorrington runs a tight balance sheet and can make magic happen for LAFC. So hats off to him. But yeah, I failed to see where, like, was there a coupon attached to this?
The thing about Lloris as a Spurs fan, and I have so many positive memories that are associated with Lloris.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
for the last couple of seasons, there have been whispers about, is it time to move on? And obviously they have done that. And that's the reason why this deal was possible. But I don't know. As always, making a jump from trying to compare production in the Premier League to production in MLS is so challenging. But in Crépeau, you had an amazing young goalkeeper who was only getting better. And in Lloris, you had a player who was on the down, was respectfully, he was on the downswing in quality-wise, and getting paid for MLS, in MLS terms, a eye-watering amount of money.
£100,000 weekly salary he made last year. Annual salary of £5.2 million.
And for him,
which I'm not saying he's going to make at LAFC, but yeah,
I think for his part and where he's at in his career, it would totally make sense that the next club that he went to paid him a little bit less. And I don't necessarily think going to a big MLS club is a bad career move for him, but the trying to figure out how a player of that amount costs less than Maxime Crépeau and why you would, and if he doesn't, why you wouldn't just pay your good keeper who is, you know, at or nearing their prime.
Well, and I thought Portland had a pretty good goalkeeper in Ivicic. I don't know where all that... now I'm fussing over names and making sure that's the right goalkeeper. Yes. I thought they had that position kind of sorted out. I mean, also, I totally understand the businesses of, like, if you hear Maxime Crépeau is available, you're like, yeah, if we got the money, let's do it. And I think the Timbers do have the cash to spare. The thing that adds on to all of this that's sort of head-scratchy about it is that John McCarthy, who was very capable at filling in for Maxime Crépeau, and I thought the combination of the two players worked really well, has also left the club and is now with LAFC's cross-town rival, LA Galaxy. So it feels extra kind of just strange to be like, well, we have a goalkeeper entering our prime that the fans love and is one of the best keepers in MLS, top five for sure. And we have a young goalkeeper in John McCarthy who's proven himself to be excellent as well. And we're going to move them both on to Western Conference rivals, and we are going to bring in Hugo Lloris. Like, it's just... Yeah. We will see how it all pans out. For John McCarthy, I think it's a good... I think he's probably going to be the starting choice at LA Galaxy, and I think that's a great opportunity for him. We obviously know Greg Vanney is good at continuing the development of players. So I think that will be a great opportunity for him. Elsewhere in LAFC news, Diego Palacios has also left LAFC. He's going to Corinthians. Another, you know, I don't know if he was always starting, but I feel like Palacios certainly was like a key midfield fixture for LAFC. So a club that by no means needed a rebuild all of a sudden is going to have, I think, a very different look and feel. As ever, the big question mark is, will they be able to tie down Denny Bouanga to come back next season? Because if they can, all of this, I'm like, well, maybe it doesn't, it kind of all comes out in the wash. But if they can't get that deal done, I think you have to feel a little bit nervous as an LAFC fan that you've got so much change happening. Not that Steve Cherundolo hasn't proven himself capable of navigating through changes. It's just a lot. That's all I'm saying.
When you're one of those MLS clubs in that, you know, stratosphere position where you can hover up names and you have some cachet to do so, you also have to, like, evaluate who you got to move on. And Mario Gonzalez, who joined in July of last year, has been loaned to a second division Spanish side. Sporting de Gijon. And that also seems to be part of, you know, I don't know if that has a salary cap impact or what, but a part of the, okay, well, we've got this, you know, Diego Palacios, international player, but maybe there's interest, and I don't know if we are going to, I don't know if he fits into the plan. So trying to tune up and, like you say, make that big, try to retain a big piece or bring in a new piece to put that together. One thing that I like, piece of news coming out of LAFC, is that Giorgio Chiellini is sticking around as a player development coach.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think they'd kind of hinted at a post-retirement role for him with the club, or certainly Chiellini had mentioned it was something he wanted, but I think that that's definitely... Yeah, I mean, that seems like a no-brainer. Do you want the greatest generational center back to be a player development coach? Sure. Yeah.
Again, noted. Wilfred Nancy said, "I train my players on this guy," so he's a living teaching tool. And also, just like, this is maybe because I've been inundated with pictures of him and Vanni Sartini hugging, but he has always looked like he was having a great time there. When you bring in a legend like that at the end of their career, you would think, you know, obviously there's so much going on with them, and there's so many fans around the world that have a deep relationship with this person that they don't necessarily, it's understandable if they want to move back to Italy and you know, reconnect with that community. But he looked... genuinely, from what I had heard, he has been generous with his time with people, given that status that you mentioned, and he's always looked like he's been enjoying himself. So I think it's I think it's nice that there's a little bit more Chiellini in LAFC's future.
Absolutely. Goodness me, I'm just looking at the time, and I'm then looking at all of these transfers in front of me, and I don't think there's any way we get through them all. So I will
let's just read them.
Just read them.
Just read them.
I'm going to blast you some.
All right.
Portland Timbers picked up Kamal Miller, so he thought he might have escaped Phil Neville's clutches, but only got a brief taste of the messy train and has gone over to Portland Timbers.
Oh, speaking of Timbers, I don't want to. You just made this note about time, but there's one more element of the Max Crippo thing we have to talk about, and it's the Cascadia rivalry, and it is the fact that Maxime Crippo demanded an emergency transfer out of Vancouver, and everybody said, "We understand. We want what's best for you." Who knows what the situation is that requires such a maneuver? And he then said, told the press in Los Angeles, "I just really wanted to work with Mark Dos Santos."
Yeah.
And now the place that he went to in an emergency that necessitated us, you know, understand the Whitecaps understandably letting him out of his contract, he has just as easily walked away from because they didn't pay him enough. And now he is going to be at the, you know, longtime rivals. He was already getting booed at BC Place, which, like, it's always complicated emotions because on a Canadian standpoint and even on a Vancouver standpoint, I have so much respect for him and his play and what he does, and I only want success for him. Even if I think it's fun to – even I think if I was in that position, I probably would boo him too. I want him to continually progress and, you know, win championships and whatnot. But oof.
Yeah, it's not uncomplicated, that's for sure. It's a little close to B tier. It's like, yeah, it's like the constant reminder of your ex in town. But I rate Kripo as the kind of player that, like, I'm going to jeer him all game and then, like, shake hands with him at the end and be like, you bastard.
That's true.
I don't feel deeply personal about it. And of course, you know, you get the news item and then it's framed a certain way, but you're like, it may not be all quite as straightforward as that. Maybe it is. I'm going to read off some more names. A lot of them are going to be names that are familiar. I'm kind of just doing a scan through here. I think of just a lot of interleague trades. James Pantemis from CF Montreal is also gone to the Portland Timbers. So, you know, the Timbers overnight have rebuilt their, I believe Ivicic is still there. So they've got Pantemis, Kripo, and Ivicic, which I'm like, that's a pretty solid choice of three goalkeepers. I find it Vancouver, hard to believe all three will be starting or be staying, rather.
Vancouver Whitecaps legend for an afternoon.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Jimmy Chara has also departed the Timbers. He has gone to Colombia. And as of right now, the Timbers have two open DP spots alongside Evander. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. We also had Brandon Vasquez left FC Cincinnati. Finally, I know it was much talked about. He's gone to Monterrey for a cool $7.5 million. I think that's good business for FC Cincinnati. Obviously Vasquez, enjoyed himself and did great for FC Cincinnati, but we knew he was kind of wanting to move on to bigger things, and he has.
Miles Robinson has gone to everyone's favorite European capital, Cincinnati.
Yeah, after all that talk about a want-away move to Europe, he has moved himself to Cincinnati. Love it. And Cincinnati putting some big money behind this move, and I think that is smart. I think we've talked about it a lot, but clubs willing to double down and invest in MLS experience, big name players. I think it's a great sign of growth for the league that not every big name domestic player immediately moves to Europe, that they can also move within the league and make themselves a career. And speaking of fine careers and things that age like fine wines, Dax McCarty has been signed by Atlanta United.
I also wanted to say, as a non-U.S. men's national team fan, I don't really think that, like, it's the worst thing ever for MLS to keep big stars around. I'm sure there must be some sort of feeling on their end that, like, oh, we want him to go to another big European town, city in progress. But Cincinnati are always looking to do big things, and that's a place for where Miles Robinson can help with that.
Absolutely. And I like that. It's worked well for FC Cincinnati. Obviously, we know they moved and invested significant resources in picking up Luchi Acosta. And obviously, that's worked out well for them. So I think that's a smart move. Colorado Rapids have been doing some big business. Speaking of familiar names from our opening line, they have brought Zach Steffen from Man City back to MLS. Rapids seem to never be shy about wanting to spend big and invest big resources in goalkeepers. I think that if you're going to do it, picking up Zach Steffen probably makes a lot of sense. It's not quite the Rapids retool that I would have necessarily prioritized. I thought that William Yarborough was a fantastic, serviceable goalkeeper that they're paying basically next to nothing. But sure, Zach Steffen's available. As we know, his time in Europe has been mostly limited to loans. He's put up some big performances, but he never quite sort of broke out to that next level that I think a lot of USMNT fans were hoping he would. So why not bring him back?
I think I sort of look at that as I come from this from less of the Rapids perspective and more of the Steffen perspective that you hear. He's coming. Oh, interesting. To Colorado. What?
Yeah. If you're like the crew moved for him, or maybe a club that's had more recent, bigger success, you'd be like, sure. But I think that it's a good sign from the Rapids and Chris Armas. And they've also brought another familiar name back, Jordy Mihaljevic, who I think you were a big fan of when he was at CF Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
He also played for Chicago. He will now be a DP for the Rapids. He's been massive. Brought over from the Netherlands. Yeah, I think that's a really smart move. He's a very clever and speedy midfielder. So, you know, as much as we've shit on Chris Armas over the years, I'm giving him a B-plus so far, maybe even an A for his off-season moves.
I would call Chris Armas medium.
Medium. Okay. Yeah.
I think
is an upgrade for him, no?
Maybe, yeah. No, an upgrade for the club as well.
Yeah. Orlando picked up Nico Lodero, which I was sort of like, okay, sure. I honestly thought he was going to be leaving the league, but if he's got gas in the tank, he was a free agent. He's not going to be a DP for Orlando. So if they've got the salary cap space, why the hell wouldn't you have Lodero on your side?
Mm-hmm.
Deby Flores, a name that Whitecaps fans might recall from quite some time ago. He's been playing most recently in Hungary. He, of course, had a brief Whitecaps spell as well. He spent a lot of that on loan. He's been brought back to MLS and will be playing with TFC next season.
TFC fans are interested in this because they need big news, but he was on the fringes when he was in Vancouver, and it'll be interesting to see if it's better than that.
Yeah, I think my memory is, I was like, he had a couple of brief moments, and I remember there's a bit of fanfare around him arriving and being a hot young talent, and it just kind of never fully developed. I feel like he was kind of a Kakuta Mané type. Although Mané obviously racked up a lot more minutes and goals with the Whitecaps, kind of just never really, it was always more potential than actual product, but not a player that I was like, oh, Deby Flores, why would you sign him? he's gone and had a full career. I feel like we should probably wrap up on talking Whitecaps.
Yeah.
Because there's been movement there as well.
It's interesting. Two players that I would describe as two players I would describe as terrors of other Western Conference teams in the past. Fafa Pico, who had three successful seasons in Philadelphia and two in Houston, and as well as another two successful seasons in Houston. Also played for Dallas and Nashville For Dallas, I always felt that he was like all right, but I think that he had more success on either end of that transfer in terms of Philadelphia and Houston. So that's interesting. Damir Krylak, who obviously has been a massive figure for RSL as they're in for years, and spent a couple seasons a one or two seasons as the captain. After when the role fell to him, is also coming. So it's interesting to see sort of those additions as the Whitecaps prepare to take on some more competitions with a Champions Cup run.
That's right. Simon Betcher, they've also sold. So I think as of right now, Brian White is and Levante Johnson, I think, are the only out-and-out strikers signed. As we've seen, I think you can also play Ryan Gauld in that spot. So there's options there. Obviously, Fafa Pico can be out on the wing or in the center. We still haven't really tied up Larea. As of last time I checked, that's still kind of up in the air whether or not a number can be agreed upon. I had heard rumblings about Andres Cubas maybe leaving. I haven't seen anything about that recently. I think the most recent other news was Alexandre has left the club, which I don't think was a huge surprise to anybody. He had been loaned out previously.
He'd been loaned out to Fortaleza,
who
automatically have signed, automatically the loan was converted to a transfer after he hit performance targets. And then they sold him on, they have sold him on instantly. So the Whitecaps have already got their sell-on fee.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it's not a big bit, not a bad bit of business. I always felt like he was, you could see the pedigree of player that he was, but it never quite opened up for him at the Whitecaps. And I think, especially with the arrival of Schopf, you kind of didn't see as much utility for him. My one sort of major Whitecaps note is that, like, I think these are good moves. Like, Fafapiko, sure. Demir Krylak, hell yeah. Center back depth. I know we play with three. We currently have four signed. And even playing with three at the back, I feel like once you add up international duty, injuries, the number of competitions, I feel a little bit nervous about the lack of defender depth. And, you know, Veselinovic and Blackman, they have their moments where you're just like, guys, what is happening back there? And they also have their moments where, you know, you see why Vanni Sartini plays them. They can lock things down. They're both fairly calm and composed. Both of them will snatch you a few goals as well on set pieces. But I think that I had this notion even before Krylak and Pico were announced. I'm not significantly convinced the Whitecaps have improved over where they left off last season. And as we know in MLS, that's a problem. You really do need to try to level up each season, or you struggle because all the other teams in your competition are doing that. I maybe feel a little better about things now. I think that we've brought in some age and experience that can only help us. But if I'm looking at one thing, it's that back line that just, you know, Veselinovic and Blackman, I don't want to crap on them, but we haven't had a great goal differential record under their tenure is all I'm saying. And
could use another big name there.
We could use another big name there. I think that's a space we could spend some money. I think that we need at least two more center backs. One should be, you know, at least a senior level player, whether they're domestic or not. Bringing in some more experience there, and then probably another young up and comer, just to make sure you've got the coverage there. I know center back positions aren't ones that necessarily are always the most injury prone, and could probably log a few more minutes than other positions on the field, but that for me is my question mark over the Whitecaps. We know they'll be starting the season without Vanni Sartini for the first six games. The beginning of the season can really rock you if you don't get it right. So that for me is still kind of the question mark over the Whitecaps is defensively, can we do the business so that we're not having to rely so much on Gold and White's brilliance?
I look at Pico and Krylak as names where in the past you have seen other players got signed, and you've thought that the Whitecaps were thin in those positions. You thought, wait, they were available? Yeah. Fafa Pico was available? And I think I've said it about Fafa Pico.
I will say that I forgot to mention this. Sorry. Had you finished your thought, or did I just interrupt it?
And I was just going to say, that's been good, but the point you made about the defense, that's concerning. Mm-hmm. It's concerning, and certainly some more backup could be done there.
The piece I wanted to add about Fafa Pico is I feel like the hole that was left in my heart, the, like, senior MLS-tenured, tall, athletic striker that we had in Kai Kamara so briefly, and I know I feel like I can step off of that soapbox now because in the
we'll
same mold,
we have
a veteran MLS presence again up top where I'm like, I can live with this. Between the addition of Krylak and Pico, I'm like, I feel like my complaint has been satisfied, and I can now just be like, we've moved on. I'm okay now.
Well, we took Sebastian Latou from who was a club legend in Philadelphia, and now we have Pico. So Union fans, will do our best to treat him gently.
Yeah.
The other news note, I think that we've pretty much knocked a lot off of what we wanted to do. Mm-hmm. You had one or two more here, I think, for transfers if you wanted to mention it. I had a coach thing to talk about.
Yeah, I'll just quickly mention a few of them. Other movement at RSL, Jefferson Savarino has left, which that frees up quite a bit of cap space. I was a bit surprised by that one. I thought he's always done well with RSL. Rubio Rabin has also left on loan. Kai Wagner has been re-signed by Philadelphia, turning down the European interest. Obviously, Wagner was caught up in some racist misconduct last season. So it's interesting. It's notable that Philadelphia's decided to put their faith in him. And I'm also just curious to know, not that I think many European clubs would be like, whoa, you said a racist word towards another player? You can't come to Europe. But it does... Too fine a point?
You're not wrong.
Right? Italian club's going to be like, no.
I don't want to combine that important point of the incident that he was suspended for and, like, the rumors that he was just generally unsettled and unhappy and vocal about it. But it does kind of feel like a scenario where somebody who's completely checked out mentally and was kind of toxic and bad for people around them, and with the idea that I'm not going to be here anymore, and then they turn up at work the next month and sit down at their desk.
Yeah.
Like, hey, everybody.
What's good? What's good? So it'll be interesting to see. I guess we'll never really get the details, but obviously Jim Curtin has put some faith in him. And I'll say this. If there's going to be any redemption for him, I think that it's probably not a bad idea to stick close to Jim Curtin and maybe do a little bit more of the old listening thing and maybe just suddenly uprooting yourself and going to bigger pastures. I think it's fair to say, for a lot of reasons, probably not ready. Staying in that familiar environment and maybe learning some things will be the best result for him. I think the only other one that I thought was notable, I mean, Tyler Boyd, I don't think was like an electric presence at LA Galaxy, but I thought overall I rated him as a good player. Well, Nashville has decided they also rate him as a good player, and they've picked him up. So Galaxy have freed up a lot of space to rebuild around Puig, and I think that's probably the right thing to do. Galaxy have made some moves. Nashville's made some moves. A lot of teams have made some moves. I think I'm finally done my list.
It'll be interesting to see what goes on with Galaxy. I don't think Galaxy were bad, but it was a scenario. The interesting part about moving Boyd is that it's a scenario where, you know, you went from being in a somewhat challenging situation to being like, well, whatever works. Whatever players we can get in that'll have a positive impact, we will get behind. And Boyd was one of those guys. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how they make it work without him. The other big news is that CF Montreal has, in its search for a head coach, has squared the circle of finding someone who has MLS experience and is French in signing Laurent Courtois.
Yeah. You know. Okay.
Sure. He was the head coach of the Columbus Crew 2 since 2022, and had been a player with the Galaxy. Had also played with Chivas USA. Never forget.
Never forget.
He knows the history of the league.
Chivas USA walked so that LAFC could run. There's another coaching move, wasn't there? Troy Lesen, yeah, that's right, from previously of Red Bull days, picked up by DC United. I had heard Bruce Arena might make an appearance at DC United, and then shortly after I heard that rumor, they announced Troy Lesen, so there you go.
The other big note, and you know, just to mention it, I'm sure you know, it's one of the things that you'd probably have the opportunity to hear about everywhere, but why not just make a little note of it? the Society for American Soccer History's National Soccer Hall of Fame member Franz Beckenbauer passed away. The worldwide legend of football, who was a big World Cup winner and had a big history for Bayern Munich, also was a fairly massive player in the history of American sports. Described he was a part of the New York Cosmos, one of the most glittering players in the New York Cosmos's galaxy. That of course was both what made the NASL so exciting in the 1970s and also eventually contributed to its downfall with sort of the massive spending that went on at a couple clubs. But Beckenbauer himself was, as the Society for American History describes in its Hall of Fame bio, probably the NASL's finest player. He won championships with the Cosmos in 1977, 78, and 1980. And in his best season was probably 1978, when he played 33 games and scored 10 goals, declining to play for West Germany at the World Cup that year. So he joined the Cosmos at the time that Pelé was leaving the Cosmos, and the start of like this big, you know, that was when the Cosmos attendances started jumping up, according to this induction. And he was definitely one of the gems that was playing in ASL in the 70s and a notable name in the history of club soccer in North America and everywhere else.
Absolutely.
Until we, I feel like the next time we talk, we'll have actual games in February. Can you imagine that?
I have to. And until then, Home and Garden Show will be underway.
The Home and Garden Show. Can you report on...
We shouldn't have spilled this, and I should have just gone and been like, I'm here reporting on the CONCACAF champions. What the? And just run with it. Just run with it. You can find me Instagram at That's
Please
So
Please
don't
MLS. Go to the Home and Garden Show unless you really want to.
That's what you're going to see.
Yeah.
You can find me on Instagram at That's So MLS. You can, of course, find this podcast at thatsomls.com, on Apple Podcasts and all the other podcast places. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Where can we find you?
Please find me online at www.team-bates.com and at Team Bates on various social – Team Bates or Team Batesy on the site that was Twitter, Blue Sky. I'm also on Mastodon, Threads, all of those. You can find me online. Team Batesy on Instagram is also a good way to keep up with me as we gear up for this off season. It feels like it has lasted about a week
before it
ramps back
season.
Up again. That's right. And to everybody that isn't currently suspended in advance of the first MLS games of the season, don't get sent off.